This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode 148 of Good Humans Podcast with maybe one of my favorite episodes ever, and it is Lucy Bartholomew. Lucy is a Good Human Factory ambassador, also one of Australia's most decorated and most loved ultra endurance athletes. And this chat is one of the most incredible, informative, and yeah, beautiful conversations I've got to have. A big thank you, of course, to Drink a Repper, our brain drink sponsor. If you are on the Gold Coast this weekend, Saturday the 30th of March, so tomorrow, the day this episode comes out, we are hosting a free mindful morning at Currumbin Beach, right in front of Salt Mill, the cafe. I'm going to be guiding us through a 60-minute little workshop where I'll be doing a gratitude session, a kindness session, a mindfulness session, and then a fun little activity at the end, which I'm going to keep a bit of a secret. First 20 people down there, so you're probably going to have to get there at 6:30 for this, are going to get a free towel from Dry Times. Everyone's going to get free a wrapper. We've got tote bags to give out and a bunch of fun prizes as well for some people who get involved in the session. So come on down. It's completely free. And if you want to learn more about Drink a Wrapper, head over to their website, drinkarepa.com. Use code GOODHUMAN if you want to pick up any of their products. You get a huge 25% off. But most importantly, you can learn about all their science, all developed by neuroscientists. Tasty, delicious blackcurrant flavor. They have powders, they have drinks, and they have capsules. You're going to love it. I use it every day, and I love it too. Also, a big thank you to Wild Earth Australia. I've partnered with Wild Earth Australia to gear up for the UTA 100-kilometer race that I am training for at the moment, and I'm stoked to share that they've provided my beautiful listeners with an epic discount. So if you go to the show notes and download the Wild Earth wallet pass, this will give you access to Wild Earth sale price all day, every day, whether they're on sale or not. So pretty much everything on their store, you're going to get a discount price if you sign up for this little pass. So you can click the link in the show notes, fill in the short little form. It'll create an account for you. You can add then that pass to your wallet on your iPhone. And then when you go into store, you can scan it, you get the discount. Or if you buy online, you can use it through your account too. So big thanks to Wild Earth, the most epic store. If you want to pick up any running equipment, any hiking, camping, all of that good stuff, they have it all. So big thanks to Wild Earth for supporting my run and supporting Good Humans Podcast as well. Okay, today we have Lucy Bartholomew. Lucy is just an incredible human. She's been an ambassador for the Good Human Factory for quite a few years now, and we'd actually never met until this podcast in person. We'd connected through socials a lot, and yeah, she reached out to me a few years ago saying, I love what you're doing, I'd love to get involved. So she's been supporting the Good Human Factory, wearing our merch, and just getting involved wherever she can. But yeah, this chat was incredible. When I put out on my social media, who should I get on for a chat, Lucy was the most recommended guest, and I know exactly why now. After speaking to her, she has a wealth of knowledge. This episode goes really deep into why she got into running, some of her early runs, running an ultra marathon, I think at 16 or maybe 17 years old, with her dad, having to change the rules with some of the requirements to be able to run younger. She's won the race that I'm going to be competing in, the UTA Ultra 100 kilometer in the Blue Mountains. She's won that one before, so we really broke down the race and got a good understanding of what I'm going to be going through, and she gave me some tips that I haven't heard from any of the other running experts I've had on yet. So you guys are going to love this episode. Do me a huge favor though, if you do enjoy the episode, either share it on your Instagram story, that's bonus points, but just send it to a friend. If you're a runner, if you're someone who's really excited about trying to get into endurance running, or if you're someone who found any moments throughout this podcast informative, educational, or motivational for you, text it to one friend, text it to five friends, send it in your group chats to people and be like, get around this podcast because you're going to learn something. I know I got a lot out of this episode, so you guys will too. If you can do me one last favor as well, hit that 5-star rating on Apple Podcast or Spotify, whichever platform you listen on. Leave us a little review if you can, and that would mean a lot to me. Or very easily, just hit that like or subscribe button and go check out the rest of the incredible guests we've got on this podcast. Over 147 guests, incredible conversations, really beautiful stories, and you can learn a lot from everyone. Also, if you're enjoying the running content, make sure you go back and listen to the first 6 weeks of 100 Days to 100Ks. I've been breaking down everything I'm doing in preparation for this 100K ultra marathon. All right, that's enough for me. Let's jump into the conversation. Finally, we're doing it. Lucy Bartholomew, welcome to Good Humans Podcast. How you going, Luz?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I know. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming down to my little hotel room here in Melbourne. You're training, getting ready to go overseas on Sunday. One of the most decorated and incredible ultra marathon runners from Australia, Good Human Factory ambassador, and somebody who I've been meaning to do a podcast with and catch up with for years, and we finally meet. How are you going?
Yeah, good. I'm super, super stoked, and I'm so excited about your journey to UTA and to get to meet you and in person. So it's really awesome. I feel very grateful.
Oh, and you're doing it too, right?
I sure am. I'll be on that start line with you.
Oh, no way. I'll be just watching you in the distance, waving as you run off on that first kilometer.
I'll clear the cobwebs for you.
Can't wait. Yeah, seriously, cobwebs and running. I've learned that with trails, some serious cobwebs around the face.
Yeah.
Oh, too good. How we do open Good Humans podcast always. You said you've been hearing about this drink all the time on my podcast, but you haven't tried it yet. So we've got a few of the newer Rapid cans, the Brain Performance drink. We're going to crack these. Hopefully, it shouldn't be fizzy. Yeah, it's not. Yeah. It sounds like it's fizzy, but it's not. But cheers.
Cheers.
Finally get to try a wrapper that you've heard so much about.
Yeah.
So yum.
Oh, yeah, it's nice. I was picturing like a Ribena, but it's so not sweet.
It's like not flavor. As like, it's not like sugary sweet. It's got that like bitter almost.
It tastes like it's good for you.
Yeah. But it's like tasty too. It's not
totally.
Right. But anyway, thank you to a wrapper firing up our brains, all natural, no caffeine. And yeah, just a delicious drink all developed by neuroscientists, millions of dollars of clinical studies to show that it's going to make our brain perform and hopefully have a beautiful chat right now. Another thing I do open all Good Humans podcasts with is what are you grateful for right now in your life?
Oh, you know, I think something I'm always grateful for is health and the freedom to do the sport that I love as my profession. But I'm definitely grateful to be here and to have met you. I feel like I've been following online and communicating, but to look someone in the eye is another level. It's cool.
It's way different, isn't it? That's another thing I guess I was going to allude to. The Good Human Factory, you've been an ambassador for, I mean, to be honest, everyone who's been an ambassador has been an ambassador for like 2 years, because I haven't really added anyone to the list because I feel like we've got such an amazing team for starters, but I feel like I don't really do enough with the team yet anyway. So I was telling you off air, we've got a few ideas hopefully coming up once I grow this thing a little bit more and have the resources to be able to connect with everyone a bit more. But yeah, what's it meant to you to be able to represent, I guess, a organization that's trying to help people with their mental health?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, just wearing the merchandise, it just starts conversations. It's been cool to take it overseas and to have people question, and it just starts a conversation, which is so awesome. I feel like the list of athletes that you've got on as ambassadors is just like such a great wealth of knowledge and also experiences, but mainly it's a conversation starter, and that's where mental health begins. So it's pretty awesome to be an ambassador for that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And like you said, the ambassador list is like pretty wide. It's like so decorated, but so wide. There's no there's no real formula to it. It's like, we've got a volleyball player, we've got a couple wakeboard. Obviously there's like a lot of my like close friends, but then there's like this other group of you who are just like incredible athletes, like Storm Hunter, like number one in the world currently for women's doubles tennis. She's like won Indian Wells mixed doubles, like incredible Aussie young athlete. Obviously yourself, Jackie Bell, Sam Fricker. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But I'm going to try and connect everyone and do like some Zoom chats like once a quarter and just be like, hey, if anyone's in this part of the world at this time, maybe you can watch each other and like support, because yeah, we can all share and learn from each other.
Yeah. And I think on that, like, these people who I guess I followed along with and think that they're superhuman, they're so incredible at what they do. It's really nice to humanize it and to see that everyone has their ups and downs with mental health, with injuries, with having their passion become their profession. And so to have that, whether it's a different sport, it's a very like-minded journey. And so I think that support has been cool.
Yeah. Speaking of superhuman, you are about as superhuman as they come. One of the most incredible ultra endurance athletes on the planet, one of Australia's, and pretty much everyone when I've started saying, who should I get on? Who should I talk to about ultra? Your name kept coming up and I was like, huh, that's perfect. It's actually probably out of everyone, the one that I probably know the between you and Jackie that I know the best. And it sounds like both of you are some of the most well-known and well-respected in the sport. So it's really cool to have you girls both as ambassadors, but also be able to have you on the podcast and learn from you because, yeah, you've got a crazy story and some serious experience when it comes to running. But I want to get to know the story. It's really nice to get to rewind back and understand where people came from, what got them to living the life they are today. So as much as you're willing to share, do you want to tell me a bit about, let's talk about your childhood up until you're going into high school, what childhood was like, what your memories back then, what kind of shaped you to be the girl you are today?
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up in a household of five. I have two older brothers. And I guess, you know, being the young girl of a family is you definitely get tough fast. And I got competitive faster. I was very competitive with them. And I was, you know, I didn't love school. I wasn't great at school, but I was definitely, you know, I always tried my best, but sport was always my favorite thing. Mainly for the social side. I was in every sports team that there was. But I was also a bit of a, I guess, like the joker in the group. And I would talk when you're not meant to talk and they'd make me run laps. And I remember running laps and being like, I kind of like this more than the actual training, you know? And so I would get into trouble. Punishment was running. And I, you know, it kind of was weird because I just loved cutting laps on my own while everyone else played in the center of the oval. But played a lot of sport, did a lot of netball, volleyball, surfed a little bit, kind of just put my hand into anything. And then used to run in athletics and cross country, was never fast, but I used to run to the meets and then run the race and then run home. And it was pretty evident that, you know, my strength was in my endurance. You know, I would do the same thing repetitively quite happily. And it's the same in swimming. I'll cut laps for days, just at one pace. I'm a diesel engine, always have been, always will be.
Really? Where do you think that came from?
I just love the simplicity and monotony of things. I just love to, like, left foot, right foot, tell me where to start, tell me where to stop, and I'll meet you there. And with the pool, it's just kind of out and back, out and back. And yeah, I think it's just like, I'm not a complicated mind. I just like simplicity, very basics done well. And I just like to refine those basics as much as I can.
That's amazing. I think it's a perfect formula for an extreme endurance athlete. Let's talk about high school. What was your high school experience like?
Yeah, high school was, again, like, definitely wasn't top of the class. I tried really hard. Peaked early, my dad would say, and then kind of realized, I guess I started to see and hear of how your value as a human or your value when you leave high school isn't dictated by how you do in high school. You know, as long as you can hold a conversation, if you can be nice to people, if you can communicate, that will get you further in life. And I was starting to do some ultra running. I did my first 100 kilometers when I was 16 years old with my dad at the time, who was 50, and it came with a lot of backlash. It was a very something a young girl or anyone hadn't done before, especially in Australia, and the rules were that you had to be under 18. But over 18. Yeah.
To what, in any race, run an ultra?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I saw the ultra running community because I actually went up to what is now the Ultra Trail Australia 100. My dad was doing it and I was 14 at the time. He signed up. He was training and I would ride my bike next to him. And then as he got onto some like gnarlier trails, I'd leave the bike at home and I'd run next to him. And I'd see that I had this expectation of him as a runner that he'd be like running hard for these hours long training runs. But when I started to run with him, I was like, the dude walks all the hills and he's just like got a bag full of snacks on his back. Like, what is this sport? And so I saw him through his training and we had some amazing camping trips exploring Victoria and just really beautiful moments as a father-daughter. So I came up to the Blue Mountains with him and I saw him off on the start line and I was like, what do I do for the next, you know, 20 hours that this could take him? And I had a bag of his stuff that he'd given me and I put it on my back and I just followed the markers and I cut the corner a little bit, cut the course a little bit to get to some checkpoints. And I saw the leaders come through. I saw just the most amazing, effortless looking athletes. And then I saw the middle of the pack, people like my dad, head down, getting it done. But it was really the back of the pack of this race that, you know, it was every size, shape, person from every walk of life getting after this 100 kilometers in the mountains. And, you know, they were walking out of the checkpoint, Coke in one hand, cake in the other, balancing a selfie. And I was like, this is a sport. This looks like you're just jogging from buffet to buffet. And I was like, I can eat and I can jog. I want to do this. So on the train back to Sydney Airport, I messaged every race director in Australia for 100Ks and said, will you let a 16-year-old girl do this? And the Surf Coast Sentry along the Surf Coast of Victoria came back and said, yeah, as long as you do it side by side with your dad and jump over some other hoops, through some other hoops, then we'll let you in. And yeah, that's how I ended up on that start line.
Wow. And you're still in school through here. What was your training like for your first 100? Like,
it was...
Ultra training, you can't shortcut it. That's what I'm learning very quickly. There's no like, yeah, shortcut by working with a really good coach to get there. It's time on legs. And when you're 15 years old, heading into a race at 16, you've only had 15 years on your legs. So like by proxy, you couldn't have had it anywhere near anyone else in the race, time on legs. So what did your training look like for that first 100?
Yeah, it was just consistency. You know, I'd run like before school and then I'd go to school and then I'd run like the long way to Baker's Delight where I was working in the evenings and then I'd walk home from Baker's Delight. But I think what I had in my favor was that I was so young and so blissfully unaware of what 100 kilometers was. You know, I'd never driven 100 kilometers. So I kind of was just like, oh, that's like a 3-digit number. It's pretty high. But you know, I really believe that we're the narrator of our story, but sometimes we hear someone else's story. Everyone says, like in the marathon, at 30 kilometers, you'll bonk. You know, your glycogen runs out, you'll hit the wall. That's when it gets hard.
Exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people's story, but it doesn't have to be your story. And when you hear these stories, if I'd looked at my watch at 30Ks and was like, oh, okay, yep, this is the wall. I'm waiting to hit it. Instead, I didn't have a watch. I had no idea where I was in this race. I just had my dad. We just chatted. We kind of worked our way through it. I was just so blissfully unaware of what laid ahead. And you get that on your first chance. When you do that 100K, something you've never done before, stepped into outside of that comfort zone, into the unknown, you really can't tell how you're going to respond or how you're going to feel. You can try and predict it, but you can also try and manifest that it's going to be okay. And that's how my day was out there.
That was a good first go at it. How did it feel finishing that first 100?
It was amazing. You know, on that start line, well, before that start line, there was a group of Geelong Grammar boys who were walking the event. But because I wanted to run at some points in this course, I wanted to take 2 feet off the ground and run this race. People thought I shouldn't do it, that I had like an exercise addiction. I was doing it for some really poor reason, that my dad was a bad dad. There was lots of articles written. The race ambassador, she pulled out because she didn't want to be associated with a young girl hurting herself. And so there was so much controversy that my dad on the start line, he said to me, Lucy, there are so many people out here that want to pull you out because they want to be right. And really they're just cautious of the unknown. They don't want you to get hurt. But you've got to smile your whole way through this race, kind of as a middle finger to these people, to say like, I'm doing this because I love this and I want to be doing it and I'm where I want to be. And so, you know, we rode the highs and lows together, and it was cool to have my dad to kind of, when I was having a low, he was having a high. And you kind of get that in the sport. You'll find that you are working with the people around you. But, you know, we finished in 12 and a half hours. I went back the next year, was able to run solo at 17. I ran 3 hours faster. And that's when I was like, I think I have a potential in this sport if I actually put my head down and trained a bit more specifically.
Yeah, wow. That's, thank you for sharing that. So do you reckon you're still the youngest person in Australia to run a 100-kilometre race?
No, for sure not.
Really? There's like, younger ones now?
Yeah, and it's cool because they've youngest come female? To me. No, I reckon there's definitely younger. Because,
really?
Yeah, I've had parents and kids themselves come to me and like ask me to coach them towards it, talk to their parents about it. And I think it's like an interesting thing because I did it, but I did it for a very green reason. Like I was very unaware of where it was going to lead me. Very naive. Whereas people now, they've seen where it's gotten me to and that's their expectation. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be, you know, I'm sure in your podcast you've heard you've got to have a strong why of you doing this 100K because it's going to be hard. You're going to be questioning, what am I doing out here? And, you know, my why back then was like, I want to spend time with my dad and I want to spend a whole day running on my 2 feet and see what happens. And it was never to become someone or to make something of it or to become a professional in it. And so if you just enter the sport to seek that, you're going to miss the whole journey that unfolds before it.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got such a strong why, and even speaking to you off air, you're like, even if I never race again, like I just love running, which is just so cool. You said the second year you ran in 3 hours less, 8 hours.
Nine hours,
100K. Is that's sub 6 minute K pace. That's quick. I did 25K. And is it trail or no?
It's like, so you're on the sand to start with, like hard sand.
That's a quick pace. So I did 25 today at like 5:20, and there's no way I would have maintained that for much longer, let alone for another 75Ks. Like that is moving.
It was one 17. Of those days.
Good on you. That is so cool.
Yeah.
So you've obviously finishing school around this time. Was that the vision post-school? Or I don't want to try and be a professional runner? Because the path wasn't really there when you first got there, correct? From what you told me before, you said, not pioneered by any means, but you were one of the first really to take it seriously, I guess, and start competing at a high level in women's ultra endurance running. So what was that period post-school like for you? Because you were so young when you started to become really successful, correct?
Yeah, definitely. So I finished high school and I remember, you know, you had to fill out what, you know, what you wanted to apply for universities to go to and stuff. And, you know, I remember sitting down with one of my teachers and she was like, okay, so like, what do you like doing? And I was like, running. And she was like, that's a really nice hobby. And what do you want to do for work? And I was like, well, I really like running. And she's like, it's not a job, Lucy. It's just a hobby. And I remember thinking, I just filled in this sheet with random stuff that I had no intention of wanting to do. And I was like, I'm going to take a gap year. I've seen some races overseas and I've seen young girls my age doing this and I want to see what they're doing. And so I went across and I competed and I had some success. And I talked to Solomon, who's been my sponsor the whole time, and kind of realized that this was a thing out there. And sometimes in Australia you feel so far removed from it all when there is scope. But you know, I as a young girl, I didn't see it, so I didn't believe it. But when I saw it, I was like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, that's so cool. So tell me about when you first got sponsored by Solomon, what that looked like back then, not even compared to now, but like how cool was that as a young girl who thought, I didn't even know this was a potential career choice, getting overseas and doing some running and competing and going, oh, this is maybe something. And then you get sponsored. How's that feeling?
Yeah, amazing. I remember going to the headquarters in Annecy in France. And, you know, they sent me away with all this kit and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I'm going to look so cool running around. And I still get that feeling when I get that lump boxes of shoes and kit. It's just incredible. You know, back then it was shoes, t-shirt and a pat on the back was kind of the level of support I was given. And then, you know, now it's like a full-time job where I can sustain a living off it and travel the world with it.
That's so cool.
It's been cool because they've seen my whole progression, the highs and the lows, and they've stuck with me the whole way.
I love that. I remember when I was, I used to be sponsored by Rip Curl when I was younger for surfing. And I remember I used to live on this like pretty annoying hill. So I wouldn't walk home from school very often. I'd usually get picked up. But I just remember so clearly any day that like my dad would be on emails with my team manager, they're like, yeah, we sent you a pack like of new stuff a few days ago. I'd like run up the hill and I'd get home and be sweating and I'd be like, it's not here today. One more day of running up the hill. That was like the only day that I ever ran home from school, unlike you.
Look where you are now, you know.
Look at me running now. It's all come full circle. What was your first sort of big competition that I guess you'd call was a successful race for you and put you on the map?
Yeah, I would definitely say in 2017, I had a really big year. It was when on my 21st birthday, I won Ultra Trail Australia, which was like a really cool experience. The home race, a race I'd seen my dad done when I was 18 during year 12 studies, and then wanted to come and win.
Where is that one?
That's in the Blue Mountains. That's the one you're doing.
Oh, no way. You won it. Previous champ. Look at this.
Yeah.
We are going to have a good chat about that later in this episode. But
he's going to learn what it's called.
Yeah. What did you call it?
UTA 100.
But what did you call it before? The Australia sign?
Ultra Trail Australia.
Oh, is so what UTA stands for. So I just got to call it.
Yeah.
Full name. Okay.
And so I won that race. Then I went across to Europe and I did a race called the TDS, which is a sister race of the big UTMB race that goes around the Mont Blanc in France. So UTMB is 160 kilometers. It's got 10,000 meters of climbing. Goes from France through Italy, through Switzerland, back into France. So I did the small version, which starts in Italy, goes through Switzerland, finishes in France. And it was my first race with Solomon. They were crewing me. And I remember it being like this massive deal. And sometimes, you know, pressure can make diamonds, but it can also destroy you. Mm-hmm. And I had felt so much pressure and I really wanted to impress them. And we started the race. I was in second place, feeling really good. Ate something, and then I think just the anxiety that was sitting in my gut, you know, the just wanting so hard to succeed and do well was actually like eating me up inside. And I threw up what I was eating, and then I walked down this downhill 90 degrees just spewing, I think for more nerves than anything. And I remember I got to the bottom at this checkpoint. Solomon had left because they were also crewing the girl who was leading the race, and I dropped now to like 50th female. And I remember thinking, Solomon's left me. That's it. I'm not sponsored anymore. Like, this is the end of everything. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to hike up this next climb, put my head torch on, watch the sunset, and I'll call it a day from there. I'll stop racing. And as I started walking up, I realized I was passing people purely because I had been moving so slowly beforehand. And then when it got to nighttime, we put on our head torch and suddenly the mountains disappeared. And all that there was like a dotted line of head torches. And it was probably the most impactful moment in my career that also has shaped the way like I live my life. Is sometimes we can get so overwhelmed by the challenge that we have ahead or the goal that we want to achieve or the length of the to-do list that's in front of us in the day-to-day that we forget that like what matters is that small patch of light that's in front of you. That's where you're going to put your left foot. That's where you're going to put your right foot. And, you know, I just kind of focused on putting that foot into that patch of light, not worrying about the big climb ahead, the amount of people ahead of me. And I came into Chamonix, into town, and I'd moved into fifth place female. And I remember Solomon being at the finish line, being like, whoa, yeah, we're with her, we're with her. And I was like, you left me. and it was just a really cool race and moment. So coming fifth on that on an international race, probably our like version of the Olympics is that set of races.
Wow.
And then I came home via Cape Town and won Ultra Trail Cape Town 100K. Which was just really, really cool. And that kind of skyrocketed me into 2018 when I ran the Western States, which is the biggest thing I've done.
Yeah. Tell me about the Western States. That's like one of the biggest events, I guess, in the world for ultra trail running. Got third in it?
Got third. Yeah.
Tell me about that race.
Yeah. So this race is super hard to get into. There's 360 people on the start line. My dad at the time had been waiting 8 years to get in. And I got in through the World Series. So they kind of saw what I was doing. They like to have athletes from around the world. And they were like, she's Australian. She's young. Let's give her a shot. And I went there being like, you know, first time 100 miles, debut. No one's expecting anything of me. I'm just this young Aussie kid. And there was an article written about me where it was like, she ran Western States like a golden retriever puppy brought home for the first time. Because I was just wide-eyed, super stoked, just like happy-go-lucky until I realized that 100 miles is 160 kilometers and it's a really long way. And I went over early and I met this guy who's won the race 15 times and he gave me three pieces of advice. And he was like, you know, don't get to the top of the first climb in first place. And what do? I'm in first place at the top of that climb. And then he was like, all right, at kilometer 50, stop at the checkpoint and make sure you eat something pretty solid because you're going to enter the canyons and it gets really hot, gets up to like 45 degrees. Oof. And you're not going to be able to eat. So just like put some reserves in you. And I get to 50 kilometers and I'm leading freaking Western States. I'm like, I cannot stop. I had all these cameras on me and I blew past my dad who was crewing me. And I just ran into the canyons, barely with anything in my pack. Anyway, I got passed by who is now the goat of ultra running, Courtney DeWalter. And she passed me. She kind of went up to the checkpoint, told my dad, like, Lucy just needs to eat something, cool down. Just like, she's going to do it. She's going to make it. Just, she's got to look after herself and be a bit smarter. And so I ended up getting through that checkpoint, getting out of the canyons and getting passed by another girl, Caitlin Gerben, to finish in third place in 18 hours and 59 minutes. But it was just a massive, you know, overnight had like massive blow up of people following me and my contract with Solomon kind of got pulled back and upped and pushed back to me. And it was just like a career making race. Wow. That's a race that can, it can make you and it can break you. And I've had both experiences of that now.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds like insane. Like 160 Ks is not a joke. That is just no. Incredible. And like, I'm aiming for 19 hours in the race that I'm going for, and it's only 100, you did an extra 60 Ks in the same amount of time. How's the elevation in that race still?
It runs a net downhill, so it's a very fast race.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's cool. It starts in the Sierra Nevadas, so you're up in the snow at altitude, and then you drop down, and you end up in 45-degree canyons, and then you finish in the town of Auburn on the track.
It's a lot of downhill. That's the thing. Since I've started, I've never realized that downhill's actually almost worse. Harder. Uh-huh. It's worse. Yeah. Yeah, from a
for sure.
Pro's point of view, it's worse, right? Because you're like catching your body weight on every step.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about one more run before we talk. We'll go into depth about my run and some tips. But you ran, what's it called in Alice Springs?
The Larapinta.
Larapinta. So the Larapinta, Alice Springs, one of Australia's most beautiful trails, I guess. You went out there 2022?
COVID. Yeah. 21, maybe. Maybe 21, yeah.
With previous guest on this podcast, Josh Lynott. I'm actually about to edit his episode right when we finish this, but it'll be out weeks before your episode. And did 230 Ks. Tell me about that project, why you did it. And yeah, maybe we'll talk about a few things. You made an incredible documentary too. I encourage anyone who's listening to go and watch the 40-minute documentary to see all the incredible imagery of this run through two nights, 50 hours, swimming through creeks, through the middle of the night by yourself with a head torch on, hallucinating, forgetting water, 7 hours without water. Like, you did it all. The documentary is amazing. I watched it yesterday, but tell me about that race. I mean, no, it wasn't even a race. You just did it by yourself just for the fun of it. Hey,
yeah.
Nothing like a fun, yeah. Fun 250 kilometer run.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about that, where the idea came from. And
yeah. Larapinta was a COVID project. So it was kind of a experience and moment in time where races were shut down. I wasn't leaving the country and I was just looking for something to do. You know, in Melbourne, we had a 1 hour exercise limit, 5 kilometers from home, and I was going nuts. But we saw a break in the lockdowns and realized we could travel through the States. And so we decided to drive from Melbourne to Adelaide, Adelaide into Alice Springs. And so the Larapinta Trail is 231 kilometers. Usually people hike it in like 14 days. And that's like a beautiful pace to do it at. You get to see everything in daylight.
And it's still doing like a half marathon every day.
And yeah, and it's probably still, after traveling the world and everything, it's probably the most continuously technical trail I've ever been on. And we went into it. I had two guys with me, Brian Hines and Josh Lynott. And we kind of just drove out in a Defender car, melted all our shoes on the way out there. It was getting so hot and the car was just overheating. But we had an amazing experience. I went out and ran for 54 hours on the Larapinta to complete it.
With 3 minutes sleep.
Had a 3-minute nap. which, you know, is very different to what I would do if I was to do it again, not to run myself to exhaustion like that. Because I was saying to you before this podcast that, like, the only dream I had in that 3 minutes, I mean, it's a miracle I had a dream, but was that I was done. And I was just like, oh, it's so nice to lay down and be done. And then I woke up covered in ants, lying on the trail with 100Ks to go. And
After
3 minutes.
Let's talk through this run. Give me, like, day one, what time did you leave? Let's do it in periods. Day one to night one to day two, night two. Is when you finished?
I mean, it's all a bit of a blur, but we started at like midday, so we had kind of like 7 hours before the sunset. And I remember at like 30 kilometers into this thing, I was like, looked out over the McDonald Ranges and was just like, oh, I have bitten off more than I can chew. Like, I can't do this. Really early on was just like, I'm so alone out here. And then same thing, like, just like I was talking about that TDS race, sunset and I couldn't see the range, and all that mattered was my torchlight and finding the reflective arrows. So I'm not an orienteer, I'm not good at navigation. I had a compass, I don't know how to use a compass, but I wanted to be rescued with a compass because it looked good if I was to be rescued. So navigating was the thing that scared me the most, and in the daytime looking for these blue arrows was really challenging and very mentally exhausting. But at night, my head torch lit up the reflectors, and I could see them so much easier.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, so nighttime became my favorite time to run. I also, just had no interactions with animals. Like, there was no snakes, no nothing that was scary to me. Those little turmeric spiders, which are like blue, like really yellow, like they glow in the dark yellow. But that kind of first night went pretty well. Then the next morning
run all through the night by yourself.
Yeah, and had a great time. Sunrise was beautiful, and I was feeling really good about this whole thing. I was like, oh, I kind of got this dialed. Okay.
And how often were the checkpoints with the boys? Like every 30Ks?
Like every 8-9 hours.
Every 8 or 9 hours you'd catch up with your crew.
Yeah. 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 And they were amazing. You know, they came in and they'd have the Defender had like fairy lights on it, and they had an amazing vibe considering they were exhausted and had just like four wheel driven into this thing alone into the campsite. And what had happened is we had to push off the start because there had been a lot of rainfall. And so we got told that the rivers actually had water in them, which for that region is incredible. And it's a very special to see it with water in the veins into the riverbeds. And what that meant was for me was that I didn't have to carry as much water because I knew that I could fill up. I had a filter. And so I was really stoked because
you had a little filter on you.
Yeah. Okay. And so that was really cool. But when you're running in like 40 degree heat, water evaporates real quick. And so from the time we started to when we got to a point where I saw the boys and I was like, oh, next section's got water in the river. That's what we heard. It had gone. And so I left the boys with minimal water. And
that's day two.
Yeah. And I remember getting up onto a ridge line, looking down, looking for that like glistening riverbed sparkle of water. And there was nothing. And I remember thinking, do I go back? They've probably left. And so I went down and it was 40 kilometers till I saw the boys next. And it was like 40 degrees. I was looking for a puddle of cow pee and I would have drunk it. I was looking for anything. And there was nothing. So I went, the 40Ks took 8 hours. Middle of the heat. I was, sunburnt, dehydrated. Got to the boys. Got to the boys. I had I couldn't talk because my mouth was so dry. Oh. It was like cracking inside. Oh. And I remember just like them seeing me. And Josh is, you know, sort of experienced in this world. Brian definitely isn't experienced in this world. But, you know, they were kind of like, oh, this is great content. Like, she looks gnarly. And I was just like, I'm done. I am gnarly. I was like, you know, I think we should can this whole thing. But they were like, no, we'll just get some water in you. You'll be sweet. As the sunset for the second time, went into the second night.
So how long did you stop at that checkpoint? Like, what's a checkpoint
probably
stop
like
there?
20 minutes. It was just not worth stopping longer because
your body just seizes up. Yeah. Hey, he's going to keep moving.
Exactly.
So then you go into the second night and Josh comes with you, or not until the middle of the night?
A very grumpy Josh comes with me. Josh did not want to be there. You know, I would love to do a podcast with him and ask him, because I remember he texted Brian and said, I think I'm going to come back because she's moving so slow and it's just not fun trail. It's super rugged and super gnarly, and you have to be in a state of mind where you don't try and fight it. You just sink into it. He came with me for a section. When he hopped out was when the hallucinations took over because I didn't have the company. And it's crazy because the one main hallucination I had was that I thought I saw tents the whole way up this climb. And I remember thinking, man, I know the Larapinta's like popular, but I didn't realize there was like hundreds of people camping on this ridge. And I remember I was thinking as I was hiking up, I was like, well, if you know, if I need anything, water or to lay down, I'll just like tap on a tent. They'll let me in and just lie down, like whatever. And anyway, at like some point I was like, you know what, maybe I'll just ask if they have any like water or coffee or something. And I went to tap on the tent and it all just like vanished. And it was just ant hills that I'd pictured as tents. And it was kind of crazy because I was so comforted by my hallucination. I felt like I had company on the trail. There was people camping. I was safe. If I needed anything, there was someone to ask. And so it was, yeah, just the wildest experience to have that. And then to be like, oh, I don't trust my headspace right now. And then I was seeing, you know, markings on the ground, thinking I'd seen like indigenous, you know, scripts and stuff, and stories. Just not there. Yeah.
And then you come into the last day and then you don't finish till the night that night again.
Mm.
How's that last day just like trudging, knowing I got to get all the way through today? Like,
it was actually so incredible. The Alice Springs Women's Running Group came and met me and they stuck with me, and bless them. We moved so slowly. We only ran when Brian put the drone up and I was like, we just got to run for the camera and then we can stop. And they joined me and they were just so incredible, so positive. And they really, like the last marathon, they came with me. They kind of split it up between them and told me stories. They didn't expect anything from me. Like, I didn't really speak at all. I just listened. I mean, I don't even know. Don't even think I listened. I think I was just kind of there. Yeah. And we got to the finish line and yeah, the Alice Springs trail running community had all come out and it was really an amazing experience.
How was that first night of sleep?
Oh, it was blissful. I think I slept like 16 hours, but then we had to drive back to Adelaide and it was just like
the worst drive ever. You would have been so sore.
Yeah.
Oh. Lastly, before we get into my run, what have you got coming up? You're going overseas on Sunday and what races? Obviously the 100 in Blue Mountains is, I'm sure, something you're training for. But yeah, what's the big goal this year?
Yeah, so all roads this year lead to UTMB, so that big 100 miles around Mont Blanc. So that's September 2. So I'll do Ultra Trail Australia as a tune-up race, kind of test nutrition, pacing, yeah, you know, 100K training Cooper's run.
Just like biggest thing he's ever done. And you're just like, yeah, whatever.
Everyone's got their own Everest. And just kind of put all my eggs into that basket. See how it goes.
Amazing. Well, now's the time to get some tips from you, because I have had a few other people on who have given me some good tips, but nobody has the experience anything like yours. Tips for my running. I'm 8 weeks out while we're recording this. You've probably seen a little bit of my building on my socials and whatnot. What are some like little things maybe training wise? And then we'll talk maybe a bit nutrition and we'll talk about race day. Just kind of like take the steps, what I'm going to go through from now until the race maybe. So training wise, do's and don'ts.
You know, the best thing you can do is be consistent, you know. So I always believe, like, do the basics well, you know, eat really well. Eat not enough, never enough, always, and a little more than enough sometimes.
Okay.
You know, it's really important that you're putting fuel in the car that you want to drive, which is your body. Do strength training. You know, I've only just kind of got myself back into doing it after a bit of a hiatus, and it is game changing, unfortunately. It's not sexy, but it works. Sleep really well, you know, like do the basics well. The Kenyans are the best runners in the world because they do the basics super well.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to think that by spending money on gadgets and gizmos that that's going to help you, but like it's like 1%ers when eating and sleeping and moving are your big 20%ers kind of thing.
Yeah, wow.
You know, getting up every day and understanding that a bad run doesn't make you a bad runner and a good run doesn't make you a good runner. It's the consistency across the non-linear journey that you're on. Mm. I think that's what makes like the best athletes in the world, is that they can do their run, put it aside, move on with their day and show up again with an open mind for what that's going to be like nice. The next day.
What about terrain training? You obviously know the Blue Mountains race is pretty technical from what I've heard and from what people have told me. What sort of balance should I be doing? Obviously, I've got a coach and I've got some really great people around me helping, but from someone who's done it many times, what sort of balance should I have with actual trail running and specific terrain running, with there's obviously a lot of stairs for the Blue Mountains race? What sort of balance do you think and build do you think I should have with the terrain and the elevation?
Yeah, I think getting on trails is always going to be, you know, being specific is always going to be super helpful. I think that whilst UTA is technical, it has technical sections, but there is a lot of running sections.
Okay.
And so becoming an efficient and effective runner on the roads is a great place to start, where you can really put your brain into that linear, monotonous motion, where you can focus on just your breathing, the way you're landing, your form. When you're on the trails, you know, you're ducking and diving and dodging and jumping over things, and it can get like, you know, you're moving your body in all these random ways. Which, like you're saying, road running beats you up because you're just pounding the same muscles. Trail running, you know, when you start hiking, you turn on those calves and those glutes. When you go downhill, you're on your quads. And so you're able to share the load a lot more. Mm. And so, you know, I would say that like in a week, if you can get those long runs to be on trails, just because road running does beat you up so much, you don't want it to beat you up so much that it affects the next day.
Yeah. That's what I'm definitely feeling. Like I did a trail 20 on the Sunday just passed and felt pretty good after it, to be honest. Whereas I did 20 today, 4 days later, 25 on the road. And like towards the last 5Ks, I was starting to get a few little tender spots in the calves and behind the knees and the hips and tightening up a little bit. So I'm like, the road stuff definitely had the impact.
When your trail run you did on Sunday had like a fair bit of vert as well, right? A lot
of elevation.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, you know, one of the best things you can do is practice hiking, because there's a lot of hiking in UTA. Yeah. And the Blue Mountains, and people that live in the Blue Mountains always have said this to me, is when you respect the mountains and you don't try to run up the stairs or the inclines, you just fall into a nice rhythmic walk. And in that walking space, you use it to fuel yourself. Then it's allowing you to set yourself up to run when it's runnable and when it makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, because that's a big one that Jai was telling me when we went for a run. He's like, number one rule, once you get to the top of a hill and it's runnable, start running. Mm. Don't walk for a while and wait until you feel ready. Just start running.
Right. Yeah. One of the best things one of my coaches ever taught me was, even on an uphill, to be able to switch gears between running and hiking. It's really easy to fall into a hike and then be like, I'll start running at the top. But for you, and that last climb at it for UTA is 8 kilometers. You don't want to walk for 8 kilometers, and you shouldn't be walking for that long. There's so many little opportunities where you can break into like a little trot uphill and then go back into hiking. When you're hiking, you plant your heel first. When you're running, you're on your toes. So you're sharing that load in your foot and therefore sharing the load in your muscles, in your legs. Ultra running and endurance is about how much can you share that load to reduce impact on one specific muscle. And so if you can just on an incline, hike for 1 minute, run for 1 minute, hike for 1 minute, run for 1 minute, and it's not running fast, it's just kicking onto your toes and trotting up a little bit, then falling back into a, and when we say walk, we mean like purposeful hike, you know, it's not just dawdling along, having a chat.
But that's for inclines that aren't like ridiculous. That's just like trying your best. But then stairs, same thing, try run stairs or walk the stairs,
man. And also a lot of those stairs have handrails.
There you go.
And use those to pull you up. Yeah, that's for sure. Like you know, I was explaining to you before this podcast, UTA runs like a fartlek. You know, you have sections of, you start on the road, that's runnable.
We're going to go through the race real quickly. You've got your car keys in front of me and you're like, this is actually the race.
This is the course
on a keychain Lucy has in front of me. So let's no one can, I mean, some people might, no one can see it actually because I don't do YouTube, but
yeah.
We're looking at the race, basically, how can we describe this? It's like, it's a little metal keychain cutout of the ups and downs that it takes in the race from left to right across this keychain. So do you want to take me through kind of, let's talk the race. So we start looking at it and
yeah, so you start
have a bit of a run for a few Ks.
Yeah, you're going out back along the road, run a ball. Then you go down Febre Stairs, which is a bottleneck, and it's going to be a moment for you to put something into your body.
Yeah.
The key with nutrition in ultra running is you start early. So when you start running, your body freaks out. It's like, whoa, we're doing something pretty high intensity. And it just goes, all right, she's running, put the blood to the legs. But what we want is we want blood going to the stomach. So if you just have, even if it's like one jelly bean or half a gel, you know, whatever it is, a bite of a bar, half a banana, whatever, putting something in just goes, oh, hang on. No, she's eating as well as running. We still need to keep blood going to the stomach. The number one reason that people DNF or do not finish ultra running, running events is GI distress. And that's because they wait so long to put something into the stomach. There's no blood there. You put something in and the body's like, whoa, hang on, that system's not even working. We can't digest that. Then they get cramps and stitches. Then they vomit it back out because the body's just like, we're just putting blood to the legs at the moment. We're just trying to like keep this guy moving. That's what he wants to do. He's like subliminally told us through his mindset that he wants to run 100 Ks today. But you need to nibble, nibble, sip, sip calories this whole day. You don't want to leave it more than 30 to 40 minutes before putting something else in, just to keep that wood on the fire, keep that burnings in the stomach to be able to keep yourself moving forward.
Wow, I've spoken to a lot of people and haven't had anyone explain it to me. Like, obviously I've had people explain that you need to keep eating, but not the fact that it's like the system of your stomach turns off and it's very hard to turn it back on once your body's freaking out. So yeah. That's thank you, I appreciate that. I'm sure anyone listening right now will be like, huh. It's a great way to put it. So we're up to the first decline down the stairs. We put something in the stomach.
Something in the stomach. Then you go across. I believe this year they've changed the course and you run on like a road more than you used to run on something called landslide.
And
you were
saying to me before, when I'm on the roads, to try and not go slow and think, oh, okay, like I just want to pace myself this whole race, use the roads and the running parts.
To run
and have not obviously pinning at pace, yeah, like marathon pace, but run at a pace that I'm like, okay, I'm moving.
Yeah. I mean, there's a saying in ultra running of start slow, get slower. That's just the way that we generally run these races. What's important is that when you're running at just like your 5:30, like you were today, which come May will be your just like all day pace, yeah, you know, you'll have built up that endurance system. You running slower than that is only making you run ineffectively. You're going to be putting your heel down. You're going to be like putting so much more weight through yourself because they're going to be long, slow steps, mm-hmm, rather than like at the moment you're moving at a cadence, like you're, yeah, moving really well. So don't slow that down. It's only putting more pressure on the body. So run that at your clip. The worst thing you can do is forecast during this run of like you can be 20 Ks in, running along Narrow Neck, which is a 10-kilometer runnable stretch, and be like, oh man, like I feel like shit now. I'm going to feel like shit for the rest of this whole thing. Nothing is permanent in ultra running. The impermanence is the beautiful thing. You're going to move through nature that changes and you're going to move and change yourself. And the body can adapt, especially when it never always gets worse, is what I'm trying to say. So you run along Narrow Neck, you go down something called Terrace Ladders, which is really cool because it's not set up in the Blue Mountains, only for race day. If you're afraid of heights, it's not going to be the thing for you. You
climb down something.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's
not stairs or anything.
No, it's like a ladder with ropes and stuff. What? Really cool. Drop off the edge of a cliff.
That's sick.
Yeah, it's awesome. Then you drop down into what's called Dumfries campground, and it's kind of like very runnable farmland roads,
yeah.
So again, like find that rhythm, kick up into that pace. You go on something called Iron Pot Ridge, which is this very sacred indigenous out and back. This guy playing a didgeridoo usually out there, and again you can't go on that land apart from on May 18th, so it's, wow, very cool. Like definitely take that moment in because it's sacred land. You then climb up something called Nelly's Glen, which is, it would probably
very be... vertical looking at this little keychain of
very yours. Vertical. That's like a skate ramp. And it brings you to halfway. And that's like mentally really challenging because it's a really steep climb, very rocky, very big steps. And you get there thinking, how on earth am I going to do that again? But the good thing is you don't have to do that again. You're doing a completely new thing. So don't take the first half and just double it because it's a completely different course. You're not just running backwards now. From the Aquatic Center, which is the 50-kilometer checkpoint, that checkpoint is alive and it's also DNF or the dropout zone. It's where people stop because you're back in town where you started. It's like a 200-meter walk to the start line. So it's very easy for you to stop because your accommodation will be nearby, easy for your crew.
Yeah, what do I do if my mind's like, quit, don't quit?
You just step out of that checkpoint. You just
keep going.
Yeah, you get your crew to no matter what, you say, I have 20 kilometers to Queen Vic Hospital, which is the next big checkpoint. And then at that point, you have 20 Ks to go. Yeah. Hospital's not in function anymore. But yeah, you know, you just leave that checkpoint because everyone feels terrible coming off that climb and into halfway. It's very hard for the mind to be like, cool, well, that was a terrible 50 kilometers and now we've got another 50 kilometers. Just be like, okay, in this race, all you ever have control of, you can't control the weather, you can't control anyone else, you can't control the terrain.
Have you done it raining?
I've done it raining. I've had the course changed at the drop of a hat. But you always have your effort and your attitude. Yeah. The effort that you put in to moving, to eating, to thinking, what does Cooper need now that will help future Cooper? And then your attitude. You can get frustrated, pissed off, sad, angry at like nature, the terrain, your gut, how you're doing, whatever. It's not going to help you. You might as well be grateful, which I know that you will be. But you can be, you can talk to someone. You can say thank you to a volunteer. You can kind of make this less, zoom out from, it can feel like you're in this by yourself and that you're suffering. Everyone around you is out there paying to do this, to suffer, you know.
Hey, tell me about that, how cool it is and how important it is for you at times running with people. Is that something I should look to do, find people to chat to and 100%. Run the pace to like take your mind off it? And
yeah, the great thing about this sport and the people in it is that most people aren't in a rush, you know. It's a long way, it's a long day, and you know, to fall into conversation with someone, to run maybe like with alongside someone or move at their pace for a little bit, is it just lets time fly. You know, I go back to that first 100K I did with my dad. It was so enjoyable because I didn't even notice the distance. I was just having a chat. And there's been so many races and we're not moving at a fast pace, and you should always be at conversation pace. If you can't talk to someone, you're running too fast. And so I really think that the community side of things and that connection with people and nature and being in it together and realizing that you're both hurt and you're both suffering, you both love it, you both want to do this, and how much it's going to mean to both of you, you can really have a positive effect on someone's day out there.
Bring them up, which they make you feel good too.
Totally. It goes both ways.
Let's talk about the top of this big descent I'm looking at. By my predictions, with the pace that I'll probably be running, a head torch is going to be coming on my head around then too.
You will probably need a head torch coming down this thing.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm thinking.
100%.
Tips of running with a head torch on, I've never done it. And then in trails too that are technical, I can imagine.
Yeah, so the cool thing is this descent here is fire road, not technical. It's wide, goes for 8 kilometers. You cross 2 streams. So if you need a cool down, if you need water, it's there.
Get wet though, like...
Yeah, if it's warm, for sure. I think like splashing.
What about running? Yeah, with wet socks and shoes.
No, don't get your feet wet. Put your hat in it or whatever. Running with a head torch, I would say, I don't know what head torch you're using, but.
Recommendations?
I would say any head torch with 1,000 lumens, which is a metric of light. Yeah. Especially because once you climb up, this is all the climb out of Jemison Creek is all fire road, and then you hit Lura Forest, which is very dark, and single track can be quite like technical, especially in the night. It looks even more technical.
Not gonna get lost, am I?
You're not gonna get lost. Okay. No, there's only one way. It's either a cliff wall or dense forest. No, it's pretty obvious and really well marked, but you're gonna want a good head torch for that section. Okay. make sure, I always put like something underneath the head torch and make your head like a hat or a buff or like a headband kind of thing. But also your head does swell when you run. So when your head torch, maybe when you put it on, it might feel good, but be okay with, if you start getting a little bit of a headache, just loosen that head torch. Cause it's something that I constantly do, is think that I'm dehydrated and I'll start chugging water cause I've got a headache, but it's actually that just my head torch
is too tight.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So just be aware.
This is, I've like chatted to a lot of people and you've given me so much more tips. This is great.
This race is my passion. Oh, so
yeah, let's talk about the final climb. The final climb is what I've heard is just wild. And what do I do if I get there? And I'm just like, there's nowhere to go but finish, I guess, from there.
Yeah, I love when you can kick people out of Queen Vic Hospital, which is where you start that long descent. There's no way but to the finish line. Yeah. So, you know, I watched my brother's girlfriend. I finished the race at 6 p.m. We drove out to this checkpoint, saw her at 9. She then finished at 1 a.m. So she finished at 20 hours or something. And, you know, once we kicked her out of there and we were just like, well, the next point we'll see will be the finish line. And everyone that makes the last incline feel very scary and like it's a big deal, but what's important to remember is that takes you to the finish line. Mm. So one step at a time, everyone's hurting.
Is it like 5-6 k's of stairs uphill?
No. So from the very base of the climb, you have about 5 kilometers of fire road.
Okay.
And again, here is where I would think that you will be strong enough. You are strong enough already to break into little jogs.
Yeah.
You don't want to be stuck in just hike mode. So little jogs, finding little opportunities. There are little downs. Just use that momentum to push up. Even if it's 10 steps of running and then 20 minutes of walking, just sharing that load is so important.
Okay, yeah, I love that. It's more about the load than the pace.
100%.
The reason is a big one in my mind.
Then you enter into the forest and it's like a little windy underneath the cliff tops. It's dark. That terrain is just going to pace you. You can't run fast through there. No one runs fast through there. It's just kind of, you then will start seeing 5 k's to go, 4 k's to go. There's a countdown and they feel like you've run 10 k's and it's 1 k. But then you take a right and you head up Ferber Stairs, which is 890 steps in a vertical up to the top of the cliffs.
Steep stairs too?
Steep.
Rock stairs? Like no, sandstone metal stairs or metal stairs?
Metal stairs with hand railings. Okay. So make sure you use them. Starts off with a bit of rock. It starts off metal, goes to rock, back to metal. But you can hear and see the lights on top of the cliffs. You can hear the speaker. They're calling people in. And it's just a matter of time.
Pushing your legs up that hill.
Yeah. I mean, I have swept that part. So I ran with the last runner. We walked from the last checkpoint to the finish. And I literally had my hand almost up his ass, pushing him up these stairs. Cause I was like, you just got to get there by cut off. Yeah. And it's beautiful. You know, you'll come across that finish line. It's people have run the race and stayed out. Crews are there waiting for family members. It's a very emotional and memorable moment. And, you know, it's just the biggest accomplishment. So I can't wait to see you cross that finish line in Scenic World.
Wow. I'm so excited. I'm spewing that I won't get to see you finish.
I'll be there for your finish, though. You'll
be there for my finish. But far out, thank you so much for that breakdown. I think that is giving me so much to think about, but also far more knowledge than I could probably get off anyone about that. And I think, I guess, you knowing me from afar and probably having a similar athlete mindset and even just throwing in the gratitude thing through the middle of sharing that can help get me through. Yeah, I don't think I could have got a better insights into that race. So thank you so much. And I'm sure everyone listening now has a pretty good idea of what I'm about to put myself through, what you're going to put yourself through. But yeah, it's going to be fucking wild.
It's going to be awesome. I think, did I hear your birthday's May 10?
Yeah, I turned 30 like a week before.
And I'm May 20.
Oh, no way. So it's your birthday. What are your plans straight after?
Just to sit down.
Will you like go straight back to Melbourne like the day after, or will you go to Sydney for a day? Or
no, I'll probably hang out for a little bit.
In Blue Mountains or?
Yeah, just wherever I end up.
Yeah. I'd say maybe come over to my family place in Sydney for a night and rest for a second before I fly to the Goldie and you fly back.
Yeah, there we go.
Hang out.
I would love that. That'd be awesome. Great.
Well, maybe we'll take that up because I'll have my partner and a few friends, obviously their crew and me. So there'll be a little crew of us. My family actually go, my mum and dad go overseas on like the 14th. So I'm borrowing their camper van and parking in the driveway of my coach. And then I'm going to...
Is Jai running?
Jai's running the 50.
Cool. Yep. Right.
Vanessa's doing the 100.
Cool.
So yeah, it's going to be pretty wild.
Everyone's going to be there.
Yeah, it's going to be so insane. But this has been one of my most favorite podcasts ever. Not only hearing your story, hearing your journey, but the way that you speak about running and the way that you can break it down, I think, for the average person and make it a bit more digestible and understandable has been just incredible. So thank you so much for sharing. If anyone wants to find you on social media, follow your journey, I do encourage you. I will put it all in the show notes to go and watch a few of Lucy's documentaries. Not only is she an incredible runner, she has a passion for storytelling, which I think is just as important as winning a race. Being able to share the story and bring people on that journey without having to go on the journey is really cool. So go check in the show notes. There's a bunch of really cool YouTube videos Lucy's put out. But yeah, where can anyone find you? Do you want to push anyone towards anything? Or
no, I mean, the main thing for me is I use Instagram, like my journal. It's everything. And then it's shared across Facebook. My training's on Strava, if you want to see just how unsexy.
How many Strava followers? Yeah.
Like 30,000.
What?
Yeah.
That's huge.
It's so funny because I'm always like.
How many kudos do you get each run? Hundreds, thousands.
Oh, yeah.
So good. I get to turn my fucking email notifications off for my kudos. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I did just find you on Strava. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably only follow a couple people.
I certainly do. I think it's like 20. So you're one of them.
Yeah, there you go. You can follow and keep up with my running. But thank you so much. This has been amazing. I do finish every Good Humans podcast with the same question. So I'm keen to hear what you've got to say to this. So what does being a good human mean to Lucy Bartholomew?
Oh, I think being a good human is being able to admit when you're wrong and to also share your knowledge. You know, I love storytelling because I love sharing my experiences, both the good, the hard, the humble, the grateful, just everything. And I think shared experience builds connection. And if you can live an experience and then share about it, then it's got so much more scope to affect more people. And that's my passion. And I think it's what you're going to do with this whole experience. You're taking people along on something and sharing the highs and the lows. And to be able to do that in such a way that can teach people things makes your experience worthwhile for other people.
No, very beautifully put. I love that answer. So thank you for sharing that. And yeah, I'm going to try and bring a mate to come and film that day. So it'll be cool to get him to film you on the way past, hopefully on a couple of checkpoints, potentially if you're not way too far ahead, and a couple other things so you can be part of my little recap of the day, because it's been incredible to learn so much from you. It's really put me into a great mindset, I think, heading into it. There's, what have we got? 7 weeks or something, 8 weeks. Not long now.
No.
Getting there, building. But anyway, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. And yeah, thanks for jumping on Good Humans Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.